Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio show. My guest this morning is author Dr. Julie Silver. Dr. Silver is an assistant professor at the Harvard Medical School and a noted expert in physical medicine and rehabilitation. She and I will be discussing about her latest book titled Hope and Healing for Your Breast Cancer Journey. The book is written in partnership with Chicken Soup for the Soul, honoring breast cancer survivors. Good morning, Dr. Silver. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well, thank you.
Really enjoyed reading Hope and Healing for Your Breast Cancer Journey. It's a terrific book. It's very moving and inspiring. It was difficult for me to read the book because I can't help myself being emotionally connected to the various individuals. So congratulations for that.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I found it really emotional, too, with all the different people's stories, and the chicken soup stories are always so powerful anyway, and to read them about all these women who had gone through breast cancer was both sad and also very hopeful.
So let us start by getting to know you a little better. Please give us a quick walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
Sure. So I actually grew up in California. And I went to medical school at Georgetown, which is how I got on the East Coast. And I've been at Harvard Medical School for most of my career, where I'm a rehab doctor. I'm a physiatrist. And I was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2003 and underwent treatment and then decided to really focus my work on cancer rehabilitation. And I ended up founding a company called Oncology Rehab Partners that has developed the STAR program, Survivorship Training and Rehabilitation, that helps hospitals and cancer centers develop a best practices model for cancer rehab so cancer survivors can go to STAR programs at their hospital and get excellent cancer rehab services.
Very interesting. How did you and Chicken Soup for the Soul got together and form this partnership?
Well, Chicken Soup actually came to us at Harvard Medical School and said, we want to develop a series of books, and there are 6 books in the series, that have our traditional terrific stories, but also at the same time have medical advice. And so we did that. We worked with them to basically put in, really good medical advice along with these great stories that they collected.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What other books have you co-authored in the series?
The other one that I co-authored was Say Goodbye to Back Pain.
That's interesting.
It is. And I'm a rehab doctor, so I actually do treat a lot of pain. I treat a lot of back pain and neck pain and so on. I sort of have a dual focus. One is musculoskeletal medicine, and the other is cancer rehabilitation.
Mm-hmm. So what is cancer rehabilitation?
Cancer rehabilitation really has to do with helping someone who's been through cancer treatments or is going through cancer treatments be as strong and as healthy as possible. I mean, if you sort of think about someone who's been in a car accident, you don't sort of send them home and say, well, go home and figure out how to heal on your own. You would send them to physical therapy or occupational therapy or whatever. And same with someone who's had cancer. They might need a rehab doctor. They might want to see a physical therapist and so on. They have a lot of problems, frankly. They're weak and in pain, and they might have trouble turning their head. They might have trouble swallowing, speaking.
Mm-hmm.
All kinds of different things depending on the cancer.
What's interesting about reading your book, I realized that there's 2 parts of the equation. You have the medical side, and then you do have the psychological side. And sometimes
right. You
don't know which is heavier than the other.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Exactly. I think the emotional and the physical, they go hand in hand. And, you can't really separate them. As a matter of fact, there's a new study that just came out looking at distress in cancer survivors, and the number one reason for distress, number one, is disability. So it really shows that these two things go hand in hand. The more disabled someone is, the more distressed they are, the more, you know, trouble they're having physically, the more trouble they have emotionally, and vice versa.
And what I like about what you guys are doing is that you introduce storytelling, and that's a form of therapy in itself because it's sort of a self-releasing.
It is. It's a great form of expression and really just allowing people to I don't know if heal is exactly the right word, but to perhaps deal with what they have to deal with and to function as well as they possibly can under the circumstances that they're currently in.
Would you feel or say, I guess in this case, that the psychological part is probably in some ways more important because it's how you fight the mental process that makes a difference in terms of putting it over the edge, you know, like 49-51 versus 51-49?
I think they're equally important. I really do. I think they're inseparable, and I really don't think one is more important than the other. I think when someone is very discouraged, it's hard to physically feel good, even if that person is in perfect health. They're very discouraged, and they're not getting out of bed, and they feel hopeless and so on. You know, their quality of life, and physically they suffer. So, you know, so absolutely that's important. But also if someone physically is in pain all the time and isn't sleeping well and all of those things, then that's very problematic too.
Very true. So what is the most important thing for someone to know about someone else close to you who is diagnosed?
Good question. I think one of the things that people ask a lot about is, you know, what can I do to help someone? And I actually wrote a book with the American Cancer Society called What Helped Get Me Through, Cancer Survivors Share Wisdom and Hope. And in that book, I asked more than 200 cancer survivors to say what really helped them the most. And there were lots of different interesting responses. One common response was basically to that they needed help with things that were hard to ask for, like they needed money to buy groceries. They needed money to buy gas. They needed one comment that came up several times was they wanted someone to clean their bathroom. You know? Which, I mean, it's kind of, you think about it, someone's really sick and they may be vomiting and all kinds of things happening in that bathroom. And, you know, probably they're too sick to clean it. It's probably, you know, something that really needs to be cleaned. So, that was actually, that came up multiple times.
I would think it's very difficult because I know when put in the situation, it's like, wow, what do I say, you know? I mean, I want to be there for you, but yet it's difficult for me to express, oh, what can I really do? And what you're telling me is that go in with open arms and expect the unexpected, and something can be as mundane as, like you say, well, I need some money to buy groceries, or can you go run this errand for me, versus maybe sitting there and marinate in the sorrow, so to speak. It's like go with the flow rather than in anticipation, well, I think I could do this for you to make you feel better. That's usually the approach that one does, because you really want to help the other person and you really want to feel what they feel and you want to console them, but it's difficult.
Right, exactly. Exactly, it is. And, you know, what helps one person isn't necessarily what helps someone else. And I think that that is something that's really important to remember, that, you know, somebody may want whatever, you to go for a walk with them, or they may want a hug or whatever, or someone else may say, you know what, I really don't need that. Instead, what I need is this whole other thing. You know, I want you to sing songs and dance with me. You know, I mean, you know, it really varies. And I think that for the person who knows someone who's diagnosed with cancer and you're trying to help that, you know, you're trying to help someone, it's important not to be too hard on yourself, because most people, they feel like they're not quite doing it right. Like, there's a right way to do it, and they quite know how to do it. And mm-hmm. you know what? There isn't exactly a right way. You just kind of do the best you can. And, you know, people understand when you're a kind, loving, charitable person who
yeah.
is trying to do the right thing. You know, most of the time, they're not, you know, someone who has cancer isn't going to be like, oh, man, I can't believe he does that. Or, you know, they're like, oh, he's trying. He's really trying. So
the best way is to be available unconditionally.
Right, exactly. Put yourself out there and, you know, try to offer to help. And mm-hmm. if you can, don't have it be totally open-ended. You know, try to be specific,
right.
like, you know, I'd really like to come and, you know, help you shovel snow or,
right.
You know, whatever it is. Try to be specific and, you know, see how that goes over. What a lot of people do actually complain about are sort of the open-ended offers that sometimes feel insincere, you know, sometimes
yeah,
feel
yeah.
like you don't really want to do something, you're not really offering to help, you're just like, hey, if you need anything, let me know.
Well, that's two different things now. That's just in passing by saying, hey, if you need anything, let me know. My thought process is the fact that under those circumstances, when you come in, when someone, in this case, whether it's cancer or anything else, if someone might be grieving for the loss of a loved one, for example, or whatever that may be, the thought process is kind of the same because you were inward. And if you allow yourself to just be open unconditionally in terms of not anticipating any kind of a request, if that person is pragmatic, in this case, go shovel the snow for me.
Right.
Say someone may say, no, you know what? I just need you to tell me some good, wonderful stories about the times that we spent together. And
right.
then you have this different set of mode. But basically, don't be the driver. Be the
right.
passenger, basically.
Right. And that's a really good point. You know, it is hard to drive someone else's life. And,
yeah.
You know, you do have to listen for directions and cues and different things like that. So, you know, that is a very thoughtful response. I agree with you.
What is your favorite part about putting the collection of stories together?
Oh, I love people's stories. I absolutely just love to hear, you know, what happened and what made a difference and just the emotions behind it. You know, I'm a writer and mm-hmm. I love to just see what comes out on the page. And
mm-hmm.
it's really interesting, you know, my daughter when she was young, one of my daughters when she was young,
mm-hmm.
she didn't talk a lot. And then I started reading some of the things she wrote in school and I was like, wow, is all that going on in her head? That is so amazing, you know? I mean, sometimes, like, you just see on the printed page things that you never hear anywhere else. And I think mm-hmm. that's really fun and interesting and just wonderful to sort of have the privilege of reading someone's thoughts and,
mm-hmm.
and you know, hearing their story.
Yeah, yeah. What was the most challenging aspects of putting the collection together?
Well, I think one of the most challenging aspects, we're actually trying to find stories that fit into themes
mm-hmm.
so that, you know, the chapters are broken down into themes and then fitting the medical advice. So, you know, each chapter was sort of broken down into a theme and we had to find stories that fit that theme. And then we had to create medical advice that went with that and the stories, you know, so it's kind of, that actually was challenging and fun, but it's very different, for example, than sitting down and writing a novel where you just can write whatever you want and it just all, you know, you're telling the story and you're in charge the whole way and all that kind of stuff. So
right.
This was definitely more, you know, pieces and putting them together.
Interesting. So what would you like for your readers to gain from reading the book?
Hope and healing. You know, that's the title of it, Hope and Healing for Your Breast Cancer Journey. And I think that I really want readers to have hope, whether they're diagnosed with cancer themselves or whether they're trying to help someone else. You know, cancer really is something that affects not only the person who's diagnosed, but so many other people, you know, the family members and friends and coworkers and all these other people are involved and really hurt by cancer, you know, really devastated. Mm-hmm. I mean, when a mother's diagnosed with breast cancer, her entire family and her kids are really hurt. Mm-hmm. So I want people to connect with the stories and the people in the book, and also with some really good medical advice. You know, a lot of times people read all kinds of things on the internet or whatever, and some of it is just flat out wrong, and mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. a lot of it's quite alarming. So I wanted people to have sort of a trusted source too, yeah. You know, for that journey.
Very interesting. Well, I have selected various stories from the chapters as points for our discussions this morning. So please give us a short rundown of each of these authors and their moving stories. The first one, it's the very first story, and I thought it was very interesting because it really catches me off guard. First You Cry, Nancy and Me by Barry Benjamin.
Yeah, so, you know, First You Cry, that really came from Betty Rollins' work, and it actually was a book, mm-hmm. you know, on breast cancer and her memoir, and became a very, very famous book. And that is exactly, I think, almost every woman's experience, which is why I think that story is so powerful. Mm-hmm. And you know, you're sitting there and you get this diagnosis and you're just absolutely devastated. And, you know, the first thing you do is cry. And I think that resonates with every woman who, you know, basically has this diagnosis. You know, the very first thing that she does is cry. And then she gets busy and sort of says, okay, you know, I cried. Now I have to move on and figure out the next thing. You know, what am I going to do? How am I going to deal with this? And that's very... just very difficult. You know, I don't know what to say, but it's heartbreaking, absolutely heartbreaking.
What are the things that one can do after a new breast cancer diagnosis?
So after a new breast cancer diagnosis, you know, one of the things that I really try to encourage people to do is to get really good medical advice, you know, to really basically say, okay, you know, I'm not going to rely on the internet, and I'm not going to rely on my friends to tell me, you know, medical advice, because that is your friends and the internet do not know your specific pathology, the stage, the way the tumors cells are, the grade of them, and so on. And you really need an excellent doctor to help you with that. On the other hand, you know, sometimes people are really looking for emotional support from their doctors. Mm-hmm. And that, you don't want that either. You want, you know, I mean, not that you don't want your doctor to be helpful to you, but you want to get your emotional support from your friends and your family. Mm-hmm. And if you need more, you know, from a psychologist or whatever, but not from your doctor. You don't want your oncologist to be your sole source of emotional support. You want your oncologist to really be the one, you know, telling you, okay, here are the appropriate treatment options. What do you want to do next?
Most of the doctors are trained not to be emotionally involved anyway, if not all.
Yeah, you know, it varies. I mean, some doctors are really emotionally involved and some mm-hmm. are a little bit more standoffish. You know, I think that mm-hmm. In fairness to these doctors, they see a lot of really sad cases and you cannot go through your day just crying. I mean,
right,
it doesn't,
right.
You know, it doesn't work to do that. So, so they're, you know, they're trying to do the best they can with you know, difficult situation after difficult situation. Keep in mind that, you know, in a busy clinic, every 15 to 30 minutes they're going to be going to see new patients and new rooms, and they
yeah.
can't get through their day if they're
yeah.
if
yeah.
they're emotionally affected by every single encounter.
This leads us to the concept of building your healthcare team, and one of the stories that really... it's very interesting, is titled Eliminate the Negative, Accentuate the Positive by Georgia Schaefer. It's on page 29 of your book. And can you tell us a little bit more about that?
So, you know, I think that this story is something that a lot of people sort of think about, which is, you know, when they're diagnosed, they immediately think, okay, I've just got to think positive. I got to get rid of every negative thing in my life. I have to do, you know, I have to just really dramatically change things. And it's actually interesting to sort of see what people do. A lot of people, quite frankly, there are a number of women that the first thing what they want to do is get rid of their husband or get rid of their, you know, their relationship. And it's like, whoa, wait a second. You know, maybe things aren't going well that well or whatever, but, it's impossible to just shed everything that's negative and just feel really positive all the time. On the other hand, you know, that whole idea of focusing on the positive and really having an opportunity to reflect, that's kind of how I view it. You know, what I think George's story really brings out is this opportunity to reflect and say, okay, I am going to think about, you know, what's positive in my life, what's negative. I'm going to try to incorporate more of the positive. I think that is sort of the best case scenario rather than trying to change everything at once and basically saying, I don't want anything negative in my life.
One of the stronger aspects also of the story, in the sense that this is where you have someone who is a friend who perhaps may not come across the right way because her intention may be good in terms of helping, but then that's not what the patient wanting to hear. In other words, for lack of a better term here, Georgia may want that person to shovel snow, and she wanted, on the other hand, to cook for her.
Right.
On the same page. And so it's sort of a disconnect there, unfortunately. And, of course, ultimately, one needs to understand from a support side of the equation, you do have to come in with that unconditional support in the sense that, hey, I'm here, tell me what you want me to get done. I am not doing the agenda thing. The agenda will be coming straight from you.
Right. And Georgia also describes in the story, which I think is a very common mistake that people make, which is that someone who's diagnosed with cancer wants to hear about other people who have cancer. Usually they don't. So she describes in this story, this one time a friend took her to chemotherapy, and for the entire, nearly hour-long ride, the friend told her one painful story after another about someone who faced cancer. And, you know, finally, Georgia said, listen, can we talk about something besides cancer? You know?
Yeah.
And it's really interesting because I think that, you know, just because a cancer survivor wants to talk about her own cancer and sort of what's going on doesn't mean that she wants to hear about everyone else's. So that's what you were saying earlier about being a passenger and really listening and paying attention and not having to direct everything and sort of say, you know, let's talk about what I want to talk about, you know. So.
Very true. So how can someone build an effective healthcare team? What are the players involved here?
Right. So, you know, the main thing that you want to think about, obviously, you know, when you're diagnosed with cancer is to find doctors that you trust, find oncologists that you trust. You know, that is first and foremost because you've got to actually deal with the cancer. But then the healthcare team is actually a pretty big team. And one of the key people who really can help, and I focus on this a lot in my writing in general, but I think it's, you know, this isn't available everywhere, but it's often available, is a nurse navigator. In fact, just this year, before I even wrote this book, or after I wrote this book, rather, the Commission on Cancer came out with navigation as a key accreditation requirement for hospitals and cancer centers, which means that they have to document a navigation process. And a lot of hospitals, what they're doing is they're using nurse navigators to do that. And so that's a really good thing to know. If you've been diagnosed with cancer or someone you know has, that you need to connect or you have the opportunity to connect with a nurse navigator, that person can help you figure out all the different people that may be on your healthcare team. That could be a dietitian. That can be a psychologist. That could be a cancer rehab doctor like me. It can be a physical therapist. It can be all kinds of different people, pastoral care, you know, a minister, all these different people. I think that it's hard to figure it all out on your own, even though a lot of people have to. It's still, it's very helpful to find a navigator. And your oncologist should be helping you, too. And most cancer centers actually have resources to help you with your team.
It's very streamlined now, basically, what you're telling me, because the support group is available, the suggestions are there, and depending on your particular personal needs, you may not need every single person. But you can you certainly have the right people to pick to be there for you as a support group.
Right. In fact, the cancer team is so big that it would be overwhelming if you actually had them all on your team at once and you were meeting. It would really make it kind of crazy. Yeah. So you do want to figure out, what do you need? And obviously, the first thing you have to do is fight the cancer. So you've got to have your oncologist. And your oncologist really should be driving this.
Right. Well, that brings us to the aspects of managing your support team. There are a couple of stories that are very interesting, one of which is The Healing Pan by Kara Holman on page 47. And what I like about it is that, of course, it's the process of transference, the way she does things. And then the other one, which is really moving, is I Miss My Breasts by Linda Fiorenzano. Maybe you can touch a little bit more about Linda's case, because it's a very moving story.
It is a really moving story. And, when she got her story published, she emailed me, and she was crying and exclamations. And I cried when I knew my story was accepted. And then when she got the book, she cried again. She is such a neat lady. She had a really great story to share, certainly felt the way a lot of women do who end up with a mastectomy, that oh my gosh, that part of my body now is is gone. And she had initially a doctor that wasn't a doctor that she trusted or liked very much, and had to find another doctor, which was, which is always stressful, but it's also part of the reality sometimes that you don't necessarily find the doctor of your dreams or whatever right away, and you kind of have to, figure out the next one and so on. And, she says, the best advice I can give to anyone is choose the option that you won't regret. And that, I think, is something that a lot of women struggle with, is that they have regrets. And I think that's a really, really good point, which is try to do what it is, that you're not going to regret. And because living with regrets is really hard. It's really hard. So, I thought that her story was fantastic. And in her story, she also talks about how her sister had breast cancer as well. And just, finding unconditional love again, too, with a man who loves her for who she is, which was also a really great part of Linda's story. So I've seen that a lot, by the way, where women's relationships do fall apart when there's a cancer diagnosis, not so much because of the cancer, but usually because there's problems to begin with, and the cancer is sort of like the final straw, and the relationship kind of just disintegrates.
Yeah.
But then so many women end up finding really great guys after the fact who love them for the way they are. And it doesn't happen with everyone. And I know there's a lot of women out there who haven't found the right guy or woman, if that's their preference. But I think that there's a lot of women who their relationship sort of dissolves under the stress of a cancer diagnosis and other issues that preceded it. And then later they find some wonderful guy and they're like, oh, so great that I found this wonderful person in my life.
Yeah, her story is very touching because she lost 3 members of her immediate family within a 7-year period. And then in addition to that, of course, her so-called boyfriend didn't work out.
Right.
And so it has all aspects of real life, real situation, and I like the story because in the sense that you can easily just sort of spiral downward, but yet there's something strong within herself that made her understand and truly understand in all actuality the meaning of life and the nature of love and the power of soulmate relationships.
Right, exactly. I mean, so much loss, as you said, so much loss. Oh, you know, how do you ever get over that? And the truth is you don't get over it, but how do you even live through it and deal with it? And I think that is the power of her story. And, you know, I wish I could share with people like all the emails she sent me because she is just like this really passionate person who is, it was just a lot of fun to work with her.
Well, let's talk about something that's closer to home because you were in a situation where, of course, you went through your cancer process and a couple of stories that really, it's a wonderful read and really make the whole equation balance itself because what you have is that when someone has cancer, there is a personal journey that that patient or that person goes through and then you have the loved ones go through their own personal journey as well. So I do want to talk about living in the cancer world and the real world, and the show must go on. And this is by your daughter, Emily.
Right, my daughter, Emily. You know, I was really interested in that story as a mother because it's been almost 10 years, and just realizing how much there was a play that she was in, and I missed it because I was in the hospital. And just how much that play meant to her. And it was actually called One Big Happy Family, ironically. I called One Big Happy Family. And, you know, when she wrote that story for this book, I thought, oh, my goodness. I always knew how much that meant to her that I missed that and how sad that was for her. But it really broke my heart to read that story and just to realize, like, just how devastated she was, and 10 years later, she's still thinking about it and writing about it, and you know, it really, I think, for her, that was a symbol of loss. You know, it wasn't just that play. It was, I was sick for a long time, and she didn't have her usual mom, and, you know, so I think that that play and me being absent from it was sort of symbolized a lot more loss, and, you know, but it really broke my heart to read that story. It really did. As a matter of fact, the editor of this book said, when I read your daughter's story, I started crying. I was like, oh, so did I. It was awful.
The other one is Reflections on Living, Path of Life by your son, Alex.
Yeah, and my son, who's older than my daughter, so my son now is 20, and my daughter is 16. And my son, it was interesting because they read each other's stories too. And my daughter said, you know, about my son, she said, you know, he's always been more reflective in that very sort of analytical way. And the stories really show that, you know, they show my son being more reflective and analytical and my daughter being extremely emotional, you know, and that's exactly, if you met them, you would get that instantly, that's who they are. And that's one of the reasons my stories are so powerful, because people really do show who they really are, you know, when they write. It's hard to hide who you are when you write.
Yeah.
And, you know, for my son, he talked about how we did family walks and things like that and really tried to talk to him and bring him out. And, you know, it was hard because he's a guy and he didn't talk very much. You know, he was a young guy at the time, and young boys aren't really known for, you know, sharing their feelings a lot and so on. But trying to get him to talk and to really sort of understand what was happening and so on, you know, was an effort for us as a family. You know, my husband and I really had to work at that and really make sure that he had time and attention and space to talk.
Very interesting. What I got from the book in this particular story is that the balancing act, again, is because the patient has her journey, and then you have the loved ones have their journey. And the irony of it, the patient and the loved ones doesn't communicate and talk and share, it's going to be very tough.
Right. Absolutely. It is very tough. No doubt about it. You know, that everyone is going through this journey. And you know, one of my, I have another daughter too, and at mm-hmm. one point she said, you know, Mom, please just don't answer the door anymore for people that are bringing food. I just want to have a normal dinner. I don't want to talk about cancer. I don't want people coming to our house. You know, it was like, please, just like, let's be normal.
Yeah.
So even though you're all going through your own journey,
yeah.
at the same time, you know, people are sort of saying, let's not go through this journey. Let's kind of like get off
yeah.
that journey for a little while and mm-hmm. Just go back to our usually scheduled lives, which is kind of hard to do because you're in the middle of this. And, you know, what you said, and I wrote in the book, is sort of the real world and cancer world, and they just
yeah.
collide all the time.
Right.
You know, you're sitting there trying to deal with, you know, going to chemotherapy and going to your doctor's appointments and whatever. And meanwhile, the teacher at school is calling you saying, listen, you know, there was a fight on the playground, or this happened, or, you know, where were you for parent-teacher conferences, or, you know, whatever it is. So it's, you know, it's hard to balance all that.
Very true. Sometimes when you can't verbalize all the things that are in you, the best way to do it is to journal. And one of the stories that was very captivating is in the section called Healing Your Body and Soul, and the title of the story is My Journey Journal by Catherine Coit on page 133, and where she talks about journaling herself to health.
Right. And, you know, I think that that journaling is really helpful. It it doesn't help everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it depends. You know, not everybody wants to do that. And I think it's one of those things where, you know, people say, well, gee, you should go to a support group because it helps people, or you should journal because it helps people.
Right.
It doesn't help everyone, but for those people that it does help, it can be a very powerful tool. And I think that people need some way to get their thoughts and their feelings out and to express themselves. And that can be through journaling. It can be through talking.
Mm-hmm.
It can be a lot of different ways. I also describe in the book a worry box,
mm-hmm.
and you know, sort of a strategy where, like, you're perseverating on some worry you have, and you write it down, and you just put it in the box, and then you're done with it. Like, okay,
right.
Wrote it down, you know, I acknowledged it, and now I'm done with it. Now I'm going to move on. You know, but journaling has been studied a fair amount and you know, really seems to actually be positive for people overall in terms of helping them deal with traumatic situations like
mm-hmm.
cancer.
Mm-hmm. And especially I would think it would work for someone who really doesn't have that many loved ones around them, because then all of a sudden they find themselves to be by themselves, isolated, and what do I do next?
Right. Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. It is pretty devastating,
mm-hmm.
you know, for people. And you're absolutely right. It is, it's like, I give a lot of talks and, you know, inevitably there are people that come up and say, oh, I had my wonderful husband and,
mm-hmm.
you know, he was so great and this, that, and the other thing. And then someone else will come up and say, I was really all alone and there was no one
right.
to help me and I didn't have anyone in my life. And, you know, and I mean, these two extremes of how much support one person gets and how little support another person gets and just how devastating that is. And
mm-hmm.
so tapping into your own internal resources,
mm-hmm.
like journaling and connecting with your feelings and
mm-hmm.
so on, you know, can be very, very helpful. It can also be helpful for people that have a lot of support, you know. I mean,
right.
you know, when you have a lot of support, it's hard to be talking to people you love all the time about really sad things, and especially someone like your husband who loves you so much and all he wants is for you to get better or feel better.
Yeah.
One woman said to me, she said, you know, my husband, he doesn't really get it. Every time I talk to him about how worried I am, all he says is, you're going to be okay. It's okay. And she's like, that's
yeah.
not helpful. And
right.
that's what he wants to believe, and he wants to infuse you with hope. But I understand that you feel like he's not being sensitive enough or thinking about it enough or whatever. So.
Right, right. And that's very true, because that's where it's coming back again to the idea, I need you to cry with me.
Yes.
I need you to laugh with me. And so it's very difficult, because I know that that's the dance of life, that sometimes forget about being sick with cancer. That's just basically about the dance of life.
Right.
Sometimes I need you to cry with me. Sometimes I need you to laugh with me.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And no one can do it perfectly. You know, no one can sit there and say, okay, I'm going to laugh exactly when you need me to laugh. I'm going to cry exactly when you need me to cry. I'm going to be perfect for you. No one can do that, you know. So, and that's hard, because I think, you know, cancer survivors tend to be more forgiving than people give them credit for, you know, in terms of, like, you know, I think a lot of people feel like, I didn't say the right thing, I didn't do the right thing, I should have done this, I you know, whatever. And in fact, you know, chances are really good you did the best you could, and it probably was really good. You know, it probably was very close to being just the right thing.
In reading your book, what I gather from just about everyone, whether you are the loved ones, or in this case, obviously, the book focuses on the cancer survivors themselves, is that you're living life, and then all of a sudden you have this tremendous wake-up call. For the first time in your life, you realize that my days are numbered. And what it does is that you have an opportunity to walk backwards in life and start reflecting on what are the most important things in your life.
Right, right. Yeah, it's hard. It is really hard. You have to face your own mortality. Mm-hmm. And we spend a lot of time denying our own mortality.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, it's so hard to face it. It is so, so hard. So I think you're right about that. And I don't know what to say to that, except it was terribly difficult and still is, you know, for me and for, I think, most cancer survivors. You know, you really want to just believe you're immortal. You just do.
Yeah. I don't think we just all believe that we're immortal, in the sense that, you know we're going to die, but not tomorrow.
Right, not anytime soon. Not anytime soon. You have to think about it. Yeah, you got to think about it when you have cancer. It's awful. It really
That's
is.
Right.
It's awful.
That's right. So now that when you have a finite time, it gives you an opportunity to really, all of a sudden, get back to what the nature of love, the meaning of life is all about, and the power of relationships. Because
right.
it makes you start thinking about what are the most important things in your life, whether it's yourself,
right.
loving yourself, obviously, and then, of course, the loved ones that you have around you. So that's
right.
pretty powerful from a book that is designed to really comfort cancer survivors.
Right, right.
Where can someone go to buy your book, get more information about you, and keep up with your latest happenings?
Well, they can get the book online at online booksellers like Amazon.com, and the Chicken Soup books are sold in lots of different bookstores. They're sold at Targets and Walmarts and all kinds of different places. And in order to just learn more about my work, they can go to JulieSilverMD.com.
Wonderful. We're coming close to the end of the show. Do you have a recipe for living you would like to share with our listeners this morning?
You know, I do. I have my own recipe, and, you know, what I would really encourage people to do is to develop their recipe. But, you know, one of the things that I feel very strongly about is trying to heal your body as well as possible, and your spirit and your emotions, and to kind of focus on all three of those. And whether you're living with cancer as a chronic condition, whether you are cured or in remission, you know, really just saying, I'm going to be as strong and healthy as I possibly can, physically, emotionally, spiritually, and I'll just do the very best that I can. And I think that for me, that has been something that I've really tried to live, and people sometimes say, well, gee, you know, with cancer, a gift, and I don't think any serious illness is a gift, but I think it's an opportunity. It's an opportunity to sort of choose the way that you want to live your life and decide how you want to handle this difficult thing, and also an opportunity to show your loved ones sort of you know, resilience that you have and that they have too. So I try to really focus on that and say that I'm going to be resilient for my kids, and I'm going to focus on having a good life, even though I am a cancer survivor.
Wonderful. Dr. Silver, thank you for the great recipe for living and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be award-winning author Dr. David Hamilton. Dr. Hamilton and I will be discussing about Choice Point, Align Your Purpose. The book and movie reveal insights from some of the world's leading change maker, including Archbishop Desmond Tutu, Sir Richard Branson, Jack Canfield, and His Holiness the Dalai Lama. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com. Thank you for listening and have a great week. Dr. Silver, thank you again and have a great day.